Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast, co-starring 10-year NBA center Ryan Hollins.
Couple pump fakes, leads in, shot blocked by Ryan Hollins. Hollins sent that into the third row.
6 rebounds and 8 assists.
Oh! Hollins climbs the stairs.
Down the floor.
Ryan Hollins, he is the high jumper.
That's what I want to see. Give me some gunpowder and throw the hammer down.
And now, here is your host.
Might send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Hollins, subsidiary of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher and on Instagram at Rick_Bucher. He is Ryan Hollins, NBA vet. You can see him on a number of platforms. You can follow him on Twitter at the Ryan Hollins and on Instagram simply at Ryan Hollins. And if you'll notice, my voice is a little bit hoarse. Once again, I made the mistake of working out too close to us recording the podcast. I did this once before.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, I don't know what, it doesn't happen all the time, but every now and then. Have you ever had this experience? I don't remember having this experience when I was younger. I don't know if it's like I'm not out
so of because you worked out, you got went hoarse.
I'm speaking, like you can tell my voice sounds a little rough, right? Doesn't sound,
you sound horrible.
Thank you.
Gosh, it's sound horrible.
Not the normal dulcet tones. I'll get there eventually. Anyway,
yo, so hold on. When you work out,
yeah,
you go hoarse, to clarify.
No, not normally. I don't know what it is. It just,
oh my gosh. Are you like screaming?
What are you doing? Yeah, I'm singing at the top of my lungs as I'm running, right? I can't explain it. It doesn't always happen, but it's happened a couple times. It seems to happen anyway. Enough of this. We have a number of things that I want to get to. Training camps have opened, and it just got me to thinking, because I was at the Warriors. By the way, I was at the Warriors' new Chase Center, their new arena and their new practice site.
Mm.
Oh, it's unbelievable. First of all, only arena practice facility that has two full courts, and they have a bar right next to the courts.
Yeah, it's like, how you posted it. I was like, huh?
Two courts and then the weight room, and then on your way to the weight room on the left, there's like a juice bar. It's crazy. They got a barbershop in there. They got everything they could possibly want. And then the arena itself, as I'm walking in, there's a guy on a ladder, about like one of those 15-foot ladders, and it's the wall on the outside of the arena, and he has like one of those little watercolor brushes, and he's brushing the gaps between the stones. It was like he was just making sure everything was perfect. Anyway, it's a beautiful, beautiful facility. It's in a beautiful section of San Francisco. It's right on the water near UCSF. I'm wondering about the traffic getting in and out, because it's a little tight. They're all two lane roads, but you should be able to use Muni and BART and public transportation to get there. So anyway, I think I'm going to go to their preseason opener if I can, just because I want to know what the atmosphere is like in there. That's what I'm really curious about. Nonetheless, all of this, talk to Steph at practice. They don't leave the state of California when it comes to their training camps. And it used to be teams would barnstorm across the country. You know, they'd go, if you had a star who played at Kansas State, you were probably playing on the campus or wherever it might be. And it was a money making venture to go play in markets that aren't anywhere close to an NBA market or franchise. So I'm wondering, in your experience, did you experience any wild training camp or preseason trips where you guys were like jetting all over the place? Aside from the overseas trips, obviously, the Lakers are about to go over there. Somebody's over there right now. I think Sacramento's is over there right now. Sacramento and the Pacers. And you know, aside from the obvious going overseas for preseason games, did you have any crazy playing any backwaters or crazy trips in the preseason?
Well, you just excluded me going to China twice, Rick. So
I took that right out of the bag. Well, to that end, how much of a difference? Give me a sense of the seasons that you started out training camp going to China. How much of a disruption did you feel it in the regular season at any point? Compare the years that you went to China in the preseason to the years that you didn't. Can you feel it? Does it make a difference?
I felt like we got our butts kicked kind of even more because, you know, you're kind of jet lagged, and the excuse of being jet lagged isn't there. And then I just remember getting hit with, you know, some running drills, you know, transition drills over and over and over and over again. And like, normally you'd be like, yo, like, I don't have my legs, but it's like, nope, we're going. And it's in a kind of inopportune place where you're on the road, you know, and you're normally on the, you're always on the road for training camp for the most part, unless you're in like a new facility like the Warriors. But I just remember just doing a drill and like kind of looking up like, yo, like Vinny, like we're going to do this again.
Yeah. And this was over in China.
Yeah. Over in China. Yeah. Because you have to do it. It's still technically training camp. And yeah. I guess the good part is that kind of like you've got games that pop up really quick. Then there's enough to kind of distract you where it kind of sucks during training camp. The whole point of, you know, going to get away is that there's no distractions.
Right.
And sometimes you just get bottled up. You know, you kind of forget to be tired sometimes and you got some stuff to do.
The hardest part, I would think, is as hard as you're going, if you're going 2 days in training camp, is if you're in China, like the nutrition. Finding, getting good meals. I don't know whether you guys brought stuff with you. And I'm not banging on
no,
Chinese
all, no.
cuisine. It's just, it's different. And it's, you know, it's just different. And you don't know what to eat, I would think. You know, it's difficult to know what to eat in terms of getting the right nutrition, to getting the right protein. I don't know. Did you guys have an issue with that? Did you combat that? How did you combat that?
Well, you're going to lose weight over there. And the advice that we got was, if you find a food that you like, stick with it.
Yeah.
If they're making a PB&J and you like it, stick with it. Because
don't get adventurous.
Like, exactly. Like what you said, it's not that the food is bad.
Yeah.
But you don't have time to acclimate.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Rick, overseas, and any of you have taken a Europe trip, you're getting runny eggs. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You're getting shrimp with the heads on them. So if the shrimp fried rice is banging,
it's working
fried
for
rice
you.
Is popping, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to stay with it. And you'll enjoy this. So, you know, that's where I do my suits at, out in China. And when I got fitted for my suits, I'm in the middle of losing weight in training camp. And a lot of these shirts, I burst out the buttons on them because I was as skinny as can be. So to your point, I have constant reminders that I was a lot skinnier, a lot thinner just by the food and being over in China in the midst of training camp.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you guys fly over there? I assume you had a charter, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, huge plane. It was like something like a chartered overseas plane. That's a different type of plane, bro.
Yeah,
it's a different plane.
That's a good deal. That's a good deal. All right. Moving on to the latest on goings on when it comes to, and obviously we have to get to LeBron and the Lakers as we are for a good part of the season. That's one of the beautiful things about this season. And I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out because I hear from a lot of fans, a lot of listeners out there that they, you know, we need parity. The whole tampering thing is the idea you need parity between the small markets and the big markets. And it's not any fun when it's the Warriors and the Cavs every year. And to capture the mainstream audiences, it's the exact opposite. The biggest numbers overall when it comes to TV ratings have always been when there's a super team, when there's a great team that everybody's gunning for. I don't think we have that this year. I think it's wide open. And I'll be interested to see where the numbers go. Now, the one thing that may offset the numbers going down, as I anticipate they will this year, because there is no super team, is that you have two teams in LA that are going to be must-see TV. And if I'm not mistaken, we're going to see them opening night. They start the season. They also start the Pelicans against the Raptors opening night, all those games on TNT. Having two potentially great teams in LA in that market, I believe could offset what I expect is otherwise going to be a dip in the numbers. Nonetheless, LeBron is saying the latest from LeBron James when it comes to the Lakers is that the offense has to run through Anthony Davis. Not that they're going to give him the ball, you know, throw the ball to him every time, but that they need to run it through him. To me, it's preposterous that LeBron James would say that for a multitude of reasons. But I wonder what you think of him saying that.
It's the politically correct statement. You know, it's funny. It's reminiscent of what Dwayne Wade did for him. And there's a point where Dwayne was just a little older. He couldn't carry it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he kind of went to Bron. And I remember watching the swing happen. And he told LeBron that, hey, we're running through him to end the games. You got to be our closer. If you don't do this, we don't win the championship. I don't think Anthony Davis is there yet. But at some point, Anthony Davis is going to be better than LeBron. Now, arguably, because of their positions, it's kind of tough to initiate with Anthony Davis or kind of win a championship with a guy that doesn't get his own bucket off the bounce. But I believe he's doing what Wade did for him because Anthony made the sacrifice to come over and play with LeBron. Yeah. So it's a sense of a form of respect. And, you know, LeBron kind of gets heat for this. And it's people feel like some of these moments that he says or does, they're not necessarily organic. They're thought out because he's so – and you got to understand that the curse for LeBron James is he's so intelligent. That some of these things are so analytically put together, but at the end of the day, on the other side, he goes and gets busy. No one can question what he's done on the floor. I don't think it's that time yet, but I don't mind the gesture, Rick. How do you feel? I don't buy too much into it.
I understand what you're saying, and I would fully get him, like saying. Putting the onus, maybe not the onus, but saying, you know, Anthony Davis is really going to be the difference maker for us. That's a little bit different than saying the offense is going to run through him. I don't know of a team that LeBron has played on that the offense has not ultimately run through him. Maybe the first year in Miami, maybe. But for the most part, I don't consider Anthony Davis a playmaker. He's great in a lot of ways, but I'm going to take the ball out of for as good of a passer and a playmaker and a floor general as LeBron is. I mean, that's what he is. And as he gets older, I would expect that he's going to lean on that more, his ability to orchestrate. Why would If you want to say AD is going to be our go-to guy, or he's really going to have to, you know, he's going to have to produce offensively, anything you want. But when you say the offense is going to run through him, I think of him being an orchestrator. No? Am I putting too much on
him?
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's why I say it's a bit of a stretch, because when Dwayne passed it to LeBron, LeBron is a guy who is a playmaker, creates his own shot. You know, that's a different deal. AD is still, let me ask you this, Rick, and in harmony with what you just said, what's the best thing Anthony Davis does on offense? What's the best, if you said this is 100% deal, what's the best thing he does? You say, we need this from him. This is a layup. This is his best attribute offensively.
It's difficult for me to describe.
What's one thing that you say he does, and he does this just as good as anybody, if not one of the best?
I'd say for a big, taking you off the dribble.
I would even simplify a step further, finishing.
Yeah, but
finishing,
I mean,
at the rim.
But he'll come inside, one dribble, spin either way, finish. He can finish going either way.
See, I think they can stop that. But when you get Anthony Davis airborne and you're throwing him lobs,
so you're saying when he's rolling to the rim,
he's rolling to the rim. Ah, damn, bro, he's the one, because he's freaky athletic. He'll catch that thing behind his head and yeah, throw it in or come down. You know, so I'm just saying, if I'm asking for premium Anthony Davis, that's what he does. Premium Dwayne Wade, he's a slasher. Premium Kobe Bryant, he's going to his right hand, he's pulling up. Premium LeBron James, he's getting in the lane, playing bully ball, and then creating for others. If I'm asking what is the most dangerous thing from Anthony, it's a lob threat,
sure,
right now.
But I guess I was taking it from the context of, if I'm putting the ball in his hands,
I'm just saying, yeah, ball. I would say ball out of his hands, or however, just that's the best. Would you agree?
Okay, if that's the case, though, then what LeBron is saying makes no sense.
Exactly,
because the ball
with you is a nice gesture.
It's like, no. For AD to do what he does best, as you said, going to the rim, somebody else has to have the ball to set him up for that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think, I mean, this is actually kind of the challenge, is we're sitting here, and with most guys, you can name exactly what it is that their go-to is. This is the thing that they do best. And I would like to think that AD is more evolved. When you say, you know, rolling to the rim and finishing, that's a Clint Capella type. And AD's got more talent than that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can short roll him, you can ISO him, you can whatever, but I'm not saying that he's that, but here's the versatility. You have to keep a big guy on him. You can't switch out small, and you got to keep a versatile guy on him, because he can step out, and now he's going to hit a wide open 20-footer, if not a 3-point-footer right now. You know what I'm saying? So
sure.
I'm not nullifying what he does, because Draymond Green can switch on to Clint Capella, and Clint's not going to post up. You make that same switch in the playoffs. AD's getting busy. He's catching the ball high, keeping it high, and he's finishing. He's that type of athlete. So I don't diminish him just as a rim roller. That's not my point. But
right,
I'm saying, agreeing with you, as a finisher. Now you look, it's not like, oh, the best thing you do, Anthony Davis, get in the lane and create for others. Not
yeah,
that he
no,
can.
No.
not that he can't.
That's
no,
not happening. I mean, basically, if you're going to play that way, you're not going to be able to activate, like, what's Danny Green going to get off of Anthony Davis? Right?
Yeah. I mean, he'll make the right play, but it's not like LeBron. No. It's not like that. And AD works. If I'm going to put him in an isolation situation where I need a bucket, I'm putting him on the elbows. Put on the elbows, yeah, and let him be busy.
Yeah. Fair. Somebody posed this to me, and so I'll pose it to you. Do you see LeBron, do you see this as a revenge tour for LeBron? Do you feel as if he's got something to prove, and he's going to be breathing fire to prove that last year was a fluke and he's still the best? How badly do you think he wants to restore his status as the best player in the league? And do you think he can?
Rick, if this year isn't a revenge year for LeBron James is done. there's nothing left in his tank. If this year isn't anything short of a revenge year, of a hit list, of a, you know, social media, you know, subliminal, of a 50 ball, a couple games, like if it's anything short of that, playoff mode where he just, you know, LeBron get like, LeBron has a lot of Hollywood in him, a lot of, you know, a lot of playboy, a lot of chill, a lot of, you know, entertainment. That when he shakes that off, we're looking at a different LeBron James. And we're looking at the real LeBron. And people really question LeBron because he does that, but that doesn't mean LeBron's not a dog. And that's what I argue with people on, like, LeBron, like, I know y'all see that part, but LeBron is a dog still. Hmm. Like, LeBron can bring it. So if it's anything short of that, they're in trouble, Rick.
I guess the question for me is can he be that? Can he sustain it? Can he do that for 82 plus games?
Nah, he's smart enough. He'll never do that. Even if it's in his heyday, he wouldn't give you that for 82.
Right.
And you know the way that he saves his legs there. LeBron plays point. Like, a point guard can pass, get off the ball, and go cut. Mm-hmm. He can play 40 minutes a night. Now, if you're asking LeBron to be Kobe Bryant, that pace he can't play at. You're asking him to be, you know, Michael Jordan in this decade.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
See, everybody screams that Michael was a defender and he scored. He defended and he scored. Well, they played games in the 70s and 80s.
Mm.
Not to say that Michael couldn't, but it's different to play at a pace in the 70s and 80s with one star player versus playing in pick and roll motion offenses and then the 120s now today. So that's a whole different deal. That's a whole different level of defense.
Yeah, the number of possessions and the up and down in today's game is certainly different than then. That then it was more physical too, but you, like, if you had the strength, if you were in the weight room, if you were taking care of your body that way, you could survive that. You had to have that. You know, there's certain guys, I think, in today's game, like, I don't know, like, I honestly, as good as Steph Curry is, for example, like, if he had to go through, and I remember this when I first started covering the league, in the 90s, is that any guy who came in the league, it took him a year or two in the weight room before they were physically strong enough to be able to consistently get their shot and just get free of defenders on a regular basis. No matter how good of a shooter you were, it was like you had to build up your strength just to be able to move around on the court. Otherwise, you were always getting knocked off. You were getting knocked off balance. You were just, it was tough. And that doesn't exist anymore. You can come straight in and you can ball because guys can't defend you the way they once did. It's, you're allowed to get up and down. You're going to get to the free throw line. There's just a million ways to be able to get buckets in a way that you couldn't back then. And so, there's that back and forth.
You move guys in a different way too, right? Like those big old muscle bound guys would have to move their legs. They'd have to move, right? They can't just plant in the lane anymore.
Yeah. No, you just arm bar somebody and make sure you had a good base. And
oh man,
for sure. No,
or
no doubt.
Or I mean, just as simple, Rick, they had a guard pick and roll.
Yeah.
You start learning playing the matchup. See, that's the difference. People understand, couldn't figure out why the triangle offense was so outdated, because while the one guy's getting busy, while Kobe and Mike are getting busy, you got four other defenders that are resting. Now, when you're guarding a pick and roll, when I have to trap or hedge or put assign two guys to the basketball, you're tagging, you're closing out, you're moving from the strong side to the weak side. there's a shift in the defense that was different, where before, you know, you just sit on the weak side going, man, all right, guard him one-on-one.
Right.
Guard him, lock him up, man.
The ISO on one side of the floor, no doubt. All right. Speaking of former Lakers, Lonzo Ball, who went the other direction with AD coming to LA, has apparently parted ways with his dad. He says he's running his show. What do you make of this? Do you buy it? Do you think he's really shook free? And I thought this is what needed to happen. I didn't know it would happen quite this quickly or ever, quite honestly, because of just the personality of LeVar and the personality of Lonzo. But what do you, are you buying that this is for real? And how much of a difference do you think it's going to make for Lonzo?
You lose $1.3 million through Big Baller Brand, and you had, what, five to 10 on the table from Nike? Correct me. I'm somewhere in between. I forget which one. And you get traded. See, when Lonzo got traded, he saw who a lot of people in his life were. You know, when you're a Laker, it's different. And he just slowly watched people talk about him, people be off him. And he's going to a stage where he's like, man, cut the nonsense. And like, Lonzo, like, dude, like my dad was loud. My dad may not have the arrogance, but I knew my dad would be obnoxious in certain moments. If you gave him the microphone, he was going to say something crazy. Like, we know who our pops is. So I think he just needs to breathe, man. It's not that he doesn't love his dad or he's off him. It's just like, yo, business wise, bro, I'm not trusting you with that anymore. Dude, my dad was my first accountant. You know what I'm saying?
How'd that go? And
it wasn't bad, but my dad felt like it was a big bucket of his money also.
Oh,
like my,
really?
Like my dad would go and like just, you know, loan people money. He'd pay for certain stuff. You know, it may not have been in a big scale. He would donate to the Boys and Girls Club, and it wasn't a bad thing.
Right.
But it was just like, oh, you guys need it here. And that's the way my dad handled his money.
Yeah.
That's the way he handled it. But I'm like, yo, all that doesn't get written off, bro.
Yeah.
That doesn't write off. So I fired my dad. It was one of the hardest things.
Oh, how did you do that?
Oh, he was, dude, bro, he was mad.
That
he
had was to bad be at tough.
Me. And then, you know, he.
How'd you do that?
I'm sure
how'd
somebody
you do that?
Set him up with a certain way. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to pay myself an extra, you know, $25,000 for this or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it wasn't bad because if he was an accountant, that would be essentially his fee. And I'm sure someone told him all these things, but it just didn't work out right.
Now,
you know, and it's not that he did a bad job.
Yeah.
I didn't lose money, but he just didn't get it. He just didn't get it.
Now, had he been an accountant prior to this?
No. And you got to understand, there's a principal difference here. My dad always had a salary for the rest of his life, for his whole life. And he could go in the negative. He could take out credit cards. He could do stuff because he knew the money was coming in. He could take out loans. That money wasn't going nowhere.
Right.
My money comes in a lump sum.
Right.
We can't just go spending. And I'm not saying that my dad was going spending, but we were in uncharted waters. This was something that
sure.
He never had. He never knew. And it's not that he spent it. He just didn't. He wasn't as knowledgeable.
How common was your experience with other guys? How many guys had similar experiences with either a dad or a family member or something along those lines from your experience?
Everybody's had something, man. Everybody's had that realize the money that I have or who I have in my circle or what I'm spending it on. You just hope that moment comes sooner than later. You know what I'm saying?
So how did you tell your dad? Tell me, like, when, at what point did you go, I got to fire my dad? And then how did you do it? Did you take him out to lunch? Did you sit down? Did you come home from practice? Like, how did you, I'm just trying to picture myself going to my dad and saying, dad, we got to change things up. And
I didn't really tell him like that. It was like I had to pretty much go to him and I just like, hey, we're going to sign these papers. We're going to transfer all the information over to Jeff, which was my new accountant. And, you know, what's this password or whatever? Hey, sign off on this. I just kind of told him, hey, this is what we're doing. It wasn't, we didn't get an explanation, because the irony is, like, he had to be mad at himself, because we operate very similar in the sense that I told him to stop loaning money here, stop spending money there, or you need to run certain things by me.
Right.
And he was just still doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then it was like, nah, bro, nah, you got your third strike.
What was the tipping point? Like, what was the thing where you finally went, okay, I gotta, like,
I think it was just, I forget what it was, but it was just certain donation, or he was just big boy in the money. You know what I'm saying? And it's in a good way, because it was all charitable, you know. But, or my dad will, like, this was his deal. And even like when he wasn't working, you know, and I love him to death, what he would do, because we're the same. We feel like it's our money. And he would be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, I'll take out a loan or whatever. I'm going to go get me a new car. I'm going to go get me the new Lexus. And he was almost like giving his car away. And he was like going to my little cousin. He's like, hey, you want my car? I'm going to give this car to you. You need this car? I'm going to send the car out to you. And it was like, because I know Ryan's going to help me with this new car. This is a give you the down payment. It was like, yo, you can help you with the new car. Because he was still working. It wasn't like, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't ever like we didn't, you know, he knows I love to do things for him.
Right.
But it's me doing something for him.
Right.
Him doing something for himself through me.
Yeah. Oh. That's tough. I don't know if you saw Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner, that made the media turn or did the media circus, and he says that the chemistry between Russ Westbrook and James Harden is, people are going to be shocked at how good it is. And I think back to the fact that those guys essentially started their careers together in Oklahoma City, and they're familiar, and I think about their personalities, and I could see where Harden and Westbrook, I could see their personalities meshing better than Harden's and Chris Paul's. We thought about how those two would fit on the court, and I think what really came down to it is that Harden and CP3 are at different points in their career, and they're, because of that, the combination of that and their personalities, that it wasn't going to work. Now, I'm not saying that Westbrook and Harden are the same. I think that there is a difference in how they operate too. But I also believe that because they came in the league together, and I don't know whether you can relate to this, like somebody that you know from when you first came in the league and you'll always be tight with them just because you guys went through that experience early on together, that there's a chemistry there that may not be there with everybody. I feel as if, like, maybe that's what he's talking about. I don't know if that's enough. I don't look at their chemistry and go, that's special chemistry, in the way that watching Draymond and Steph and Clay, those personalities mesh perfectly. Not because they're the same, but because they can create space for each other, both on the floor and off. What do you make of all that? With Tillman suggesting that there's a special combination that Russ and James have.
Well, these guys already had a prior relationship. And as much as you want to say it's just the business, off the court matters. So the fact that these guys actually get along, Rick, off the court, that's what Tillman is relating to. Mm. It's different when I go pass my homeboy the ball, because I know his kids and I know his wife and I really want him to succeed. And I'm not saying that he didn't have that with Chris, or they weren't cool, or they weren't friends. But it's different, like, when we really friends, not just like we work together and we cool and we do events together. We, like, really fool with each other. Yeah. So that is a difference.
Yeah.
And I think of even, like, you know, like my good friends or my guys that I played with. It's just different when we're actually boys, or there's that personal touch there. I mean, Russell Westbrook is one of the most organic players in the league, man. And when I say organic, he's real. He's not fake. You get who you get. And, like, he will go to bat for his guys. So there's a certain level of, I know you're not doing this for the media. I know you're not doing this for the look, for the say. And Russ, like, to a fault, we kind of can't stand, like, yo, Russ, you're too real. You're too combative in a lot of these situations. So that's what you get from Russell Westbrook and to a strong degree from Harden also.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I do, you know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of Kevin Durant and Draymond Green the first year they were together in Golden State. Those guys hung out. Those guys went out afterward. Like, they were tight. And not so much the first 2 years they were. The last, this past season, wasn't happening. You know, from early on, there was that break, and they didn't have that same feeling about each other. And meanwhile, like, the team was still getting together and having Bible study over at Steph's house and doing various things, but it wasn't the same. And I do agree. I think there's ways for teams to be successful. You don't have to like each other. You don't have to hang out, but it can help if you have that kind of closeness.
It does.
I do believe
every team that I was on that was successful, we hung out off the court. Guys, there wasn't an ego. There wasn't a thought process. There wasn't anybody trying to put stuff together. These guys, we got along. We would go out. I know Dirk and Jason Kidd would take us all out to eat, and like, we would all go. Everybody was welcome. There were no, oh, should I go? Should I not go?
Yeah.
Those situations never arose. You know, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray, and those guys, our guys would all go and hang out or go to dinner or eat or, you know, be in the practice facility late, you know, kind of like there's that level, Rick, where, you know, like it's outside of work, like right. It's outside of work. Like, you don't have to that we would do with the Clippers. You know, we may have not been as organized or coached or had experience, whatever. But like that first year, like we kicked it like for real, like everybody did. Like, I will say of that year, my first year with the Clippers, it didn't feel like the NBA. Like, we didn't feel like we were going to work. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were really just hanging out. You know, it was the team chat, the group text, the, you know, like the, we were hanging out. We would go out places. We would, our wives would hang out. You know, everybody had an event going on, and then we were blowing people out. So like, the games were a party. Like, it wasn't work. Like, it wasn't practice. It was, I swear to God, it was not work, bro.
That's good stuff. Hey, before we go. So Sports Illustrated was purchased by some company named Maven, and they promptly like cut 40% of the staff. I grew up with Sports Illustrated. I had an internship with them. In fact, I'll get into that more in the next Friendless podcast. But Sports Illustrated was a seminal place for me, not only growing up and reading it, and was my inspiration to become a writer in a lot of ways. I had an internship when I was a junior in college, and that took me from thinking I was going to become a lawyer to justify my Ivy League education to being at Sports Illustrated for a summer, living in New York. And it was like, wow, I met all these great writers living all over the country, parachuting in, telling the story that nobody else knew on the biggest events. I was like, man, if I could do this for a career, this would be pretty cool. And they were making some nice change too. So I was like, I thought if you were going to be a writer, you have to be poor. And that wasn't all that attractive to me. I was like, I'd like to make a little scratch while I'm doing this. And they were doing it. So it is, it's sad. You growing up, like, there was a time where being on the cover of Sports Illustrated was a big thing. And then ESPN magazine came along, and that was, I would work there, and, you know, having a cover story was big on that. Being a cover story on a magazine once upon a time was the aspiration for a lot of athletes. That was like having your own shoe, having a cover, being on the cover, stuff like that. I don't know if you ever, like, in your time coming up, if that was still a thing or not.
Nah, man, Sports Illustrated was big with me growing up, because, I mean, you know it, Rick, we didn't have the internet to the same capacity. So if you were going to find out a behind the scenes look at an athlete or a player, it was through Sports Illustrated. You're going to find out any tidbit, whatever it may have been, like, that's exactly what it was from. You know, so that came that was always special. And even for me, I'll take even like a deeper look, like with my oldest, when, you know, he was learning to read, and I wanted to have something that he liked. Mm-hmm. I want to have something that he would strive for. Like, mm-hmm. what would he want to read? Mm-hmm. So I would get the kids Sports Illustrated. Yes. And I would send it to him.
Well, my kids did the same thing. My son did the same thing.
It was like a thing where, like, he wants to read it. Yes. Cover to cover.
Yes.
He wants to read it cover to cover, and he's just organically reading.
Yeah.
And then he would cut out the little pages and put them in his room and put the stuff up. So to me, that's special. You know what I'm saying? Yep. That's special.
Yep. That is, it is one of the elements, because there's so much video, and kids, you know, my kids, they watch so much video that the written word and stories and written stories, I worry that we're losing something, in that the shift has gone so heavy to video. All right. That does it. Before we get any more modeling here, that does it for this episode of Bucher and Hollins. If you enjoy the show, or you don't, please rate us. Go wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes or wherever. Just hit however many stars you want to give us. Happy to hear a comment, positive or negative. Like to know what you think we can do better, what you think we're doing well. And then if you would like us to do something for you, screenshot that review to at Bucher Friends, and you will be eligible to win some prizes. In the next podcast, I will be joined by Mr. Blackman, Will Blackman, and we will go over everything that we're anticipating when it comes to the NFL weekend, along with the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson, where do we put him in the pantheon of quarterbacks right now in the league? He is... it's an interesting. I think there's a secret sauce. I think there's something that he has that most people have not noticed, that is what makes him so particularly effective and elusive. And we'll discuss that. I'll run it by Will to see if I'm onto something in the next podcast. In the meantime, for Ryan and myself, as always, thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.